you like dirt bites and riding rough, if you like shooting guns and acting tough, you're a time traveler and think you're great. Or if you don't think a girl can rape, you must be Last One.
Women can't do that.
Or can they?
Just watch me. Oh, man. Well, welcome to the RSM podcast, a weekly look into the mindset of people that love to watch movies that the internet has collectively deemed some of the worst cinema in history. Will these titles live up to their online ratings? We find out firsthand, so you don't have to. I'm Jeremy Cooney, your host. Sitting across the table from me is my suave, sophisticated brother, Declan. And with pig noise, you know, it's beautiful. And sitting about 40 miles away, joining us over is his gaming headset is the magical GM Mike.
Aw, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, buddy. And this is episode 3 of the RSM podcast. What did we watch today, Mike?
We watched Time Rider.
Time Rider!
The Adventure of Lyle Swan.
Lyle Swan.
Yes.
And
it's a book, too.
Oh, really? Was it a book first?
Ooh, you know, I don't know. I should have researched that.
That's all right. Why don't you look that up? I'll let our listeners know what this was about. Basically, Lyle Swan is a dirt bike racing dude who goes a little off course and runs astray of a scientific experiment in time travel and ends up...
Conducted by the government.
Conducted by the government, or so we believe. Ends up in the 1800s and is trying to find his way home. It was actually not a very terrible movie. I actually enjoyed it quite a lot. What about you, Declan?
I did too. It was like an 80s action flick meets the classic Western film. So it had these nice elements of... I guess you could say surprise, where this guy, Swan, brings a motorcycle to the 1870s, and they just have no idea what he's on. He's in a full leather red suit, which is kind of unseen in that modern world.
So I'm going to say that the audience on Rotten Tomatoes gave this movie a 24%.
Wow.
In relation to like Time Rider, say, which got a 44%, I think that's a way undeserved.
I think you mean Runaway.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Runaway. This was Time Rider. I think 24% is way undeserved. I actually probably would give this a lot higher, but we obviously do our ratings at the very end. Mike, you had seen this before. Was it a refresher to watch it again after we picked it last week?
Yeah, there were things that I apparently do not remember about this movie when I was a kid and I watched it with my dad.
Oh yeah, there's definitely some adult themes in this movie.
Yeah, and they're pretty obvious too. So I was just like, I was blown away at the stuff that either like my mom covered up my face for or plugged my ears.
Oh, this is the part where he gets shot on his nose off. Don't look, Mikey.
Yeah, that's what I felt like happened.
Apparently your mom's from New York.
I mean, she's not, but that's okay.
So, yeah, we sat down to watch this movie. I said, all right, time to watch Time Rider. And I think Declan came up with our new tagline because he just sighed and said, let's get this over with. So, RSM podcast, let's get this over with.
We do this. So you don't have to do this.
So in the opening credits, we are getting to see all the actors that are in this. And two things I found actually were interesting just in the opening credits. Number one, there's a dude named Peter Coyote, which is pretty cool. Definitely the bad guy. You can just tell by his name. And then the last person in the opening credits was the lead actor, which I thought was kind of interesting that they put the lead actor as the last person in the credits.
And what was his name?
The actor's name?
Yeah.
We'll look that up here. I have the wiki up. Hold on.
I decided that he is Discount Rocky Balboa.
Yeah, nice. Discount Rocky Bubble. That works. His name's Fred Ward is the actor's name.
Good job, Fred Ward.
And we'll get into this a little bit later, but I actually think Fred Ward was great. I think he played the part perfectly. The character development for him was great. Mm-hmm. Sort of this just meat-headed dirt bikist who just, like, he lives for the dirt biking and is not very bright outside of that.
True.
So right after the opening credits, we actually get what I thought was a very impressive shot for the 80s. And that was sort of a point of view shot from the motorcycle as he's riding through the desert. And it was very smooth and the image was very crisp and super clear. And I was actually very impressed with the cinematography in this movie.
Jeremy and I actually had a debate on this that I thought that it was Steadicam tech before its time. And Jeremy said, no, he thought that it was a crane shot. But at the same, what I was mentioning is that it was an extremely long shot. Mm-hmm. So it would have been a very like complex and well maneuvered shot if it was a crane shot for having it be done at that speed in one fell swoop.
I have to guess it was from a helicopter if I had to guess.
Flying really low.
That would be my guess.
With a camera mounted very low, it could have a pole attachment to it.
Attached to the leg.
So we get to meet his pit crew as he stops and gets the instructions for the next part of the race, which he has his handy dandy paper map and a little compass and also cassette tapes, which give him instructions to go to the next area
directly into his helmet.
Yep.
Which also has his RPM gauge on the left side and
a range finder
on the right top hand side of
and
it.
So magnification and thermal goggles, but it doesn't have a GPS.
Yeah.
So what's kind of cool about the helmet is if you look at the helmet and the way the helmet's built, as including like the metal brackets that it has on the bottom side of the helmet, it is quintessentially a space helmet, almost like they had on the astronaut suits in that era. In fact, like I was going to make an ode to this in the beginning of the segment when we talk about like what sort of things are happening in the world timeline, and we see the Soviets and the Americans are actually working before this movie comes out in space missions together. So I feel like there's kind of an ode to space travel and some of his gear and how it's built.
And I think that was sort of prevalent in throughout 80 movies, you know, cause that was on the public's mind. That's like what captured the public's interest and everybody was looking to the skies to wonder what would happen next, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, we even see like, Xerox and Apple computers and all of those things become more prevalent. The main character talks a little bit later in the movie about him hanging out with a whole bunch of, techie types, I think is how he calls
right,
them.
Yeah. Right, brainstorming and making new tech.
Yeah, and then he implements that in his riding gear.
He says, I hang out with these techno types. We party. They come up with all this Bonnaroo boogie. So, I guess before we get into the meat and veg of this movie, why don't you go over some of the historical points you've set up?
Oh, 1975, Apollo and Soyuz link up in the first, like, space co-American and Soviet type mission. We all kind of hang out and we link up our spacecraft. In 1976, we have a little bit more space stuff I've mentioned in previous podcasts, so I'm just going to glaze over that. But we do, like I was just saying, we see Steve Jobs founds Apple Computers. And then 1981, 1 year before this movie is released, Xerox markets their first integrated mouse with personal computers. So to explain, like computers are huge, right, before this this era comes about, and they run on these gigantic tape drives that are kind of similar to giant VHSs. So personal computers come out in the mid to late 1970s. And then Xerox, after that, starts marketing mouses for PCs, which before, if you wanted a mouse for your computer, it had to be all in one package and tied together with like actual wiring into the motherboard. And now we actually get them so that they can actually come with your computer for personal use. And then
sort of like the birth of modification or modulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, modular stuff hasn't necessarily been fully developed at this point, but it's the start of it. And then of course, 1982, I've already mentioned this before, we try to amend the Constitution to make sure that there's equal rights for women, and it fails, which, of course, is definitely referenced in this movie.
Yeah.
It's not even glazed over. It's just like, boom, right in your face.
Yeah, there's a lot. I will start off with, before we actually go like bit by bit, the female lead in this was a great character. She was definitely weird, but she was strong. She was sure-hearted. She was, you know, intelligent for the time and age. And like, if you know your history of the actual Western expansion, like, women were the ones that got that shit done at the beginning. Again, like I said before, we have Lyle Swan, our dirt bike discount Rocky Balboa,
dirt bike
driving
dickhead
driving in. Do you say dirt bike dickhead?
Yeah,
nice. The DD. he's riding in the Baja 1000, which is a cross-country race, and because he's so in with the techies, he's a pretty good rider, but he's always got these like technical problems going on with his devices.
Because he rides Frankenbikes, which are composed of several different types of motorcycles all put together.
And like I said, he goes way off course trying to find the next area for the race, and just so happens to end up in the area where they're testing a time travel device to send a rhesus monkey into the past. And
whose name is Esther.
Esther, yep. Esther the rhesus monkey.
Yep.
And he mistakes the marker for the test for a marker for the race and drives over to it and gets sent back in time. And the first sort of like cosmic joke about this is that they immediately know what happened and are immediately going to do the recall, because there is a recall to bring things back from the past. And all he would have had to do was sit in the same spot for 60 seconds and he would be fine. But 50 seconds in, he starts his motorbike and rides away because he doesn't know what's happened. And Esther gets back to the time safely, but he's stuck in the past.
Yeah.
So yeah, to also point out that as he gets transferred into the past, there is no flash of light to him. He just is in the desert and nothing changes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it did seem like it was a slightly different time of day.
It did seem like it was a little bit darker out, but
he sort of like looked around like, that's strange, but didn't like put two and two together.
Right. Well, I mean, it could have just been the sun falling.
Scientifically, that kind of makes sense though.
Right. And I have this written throughout my notes. Literally, like I said, this guy is not too bright. So throughout pretty much this entire movie, he doesn't realize that he's in the past.
Yeah.
He thinks he just went a little too far off course and ended up in this podunk Mexican town where everybody's still using six shooters and long rifles, mm-hmm. and, you know, freak out and call his motorbike the machine instead of a motorbike. So, yeah, he's not the brightest tool in the shed.
One of the things that was kind of hokey about this movie, and I want to just put this out right now. I honestly don't think this is that bad of a movie. Like, if you compare it to movies of the day and the age, this movie was actually pretty solid.
I think it was a little ahead of its time. Yeah,
but there was a lot of hokey things about it. But there was also a lot of charm. I got to say, like, if I ever wanted to go out riding dirt bikes again, which is probably not very likely, but if I ever did, I could totally take the soundtrack from this movie and I could probably ride all day.
Oh, this is a badass 80s soundtrack.
The music is spot on for almost every scene. There's a couple of hokey scenes where the music is off and detracts from the scene, but most of it is actually really solid. Dirt bike tricks are solid. Like, if anybody's really into dirt biking and just wants to see like a movie that has some historical dirt bike tricks and has a little bit of funny, hokey, lines in it, this is not a bad movie for that. But yeah, one of the things that bothered me about the scientist scene was, oh no, like a tumbleweed went in front of our camera. obviously right. there's a problem
the
and we should
of
like
scientific discovery.
Yeah.
I think it was more halt. Of a proximity alert. Like, yeah. hey, something's in the immediate vicinity. We don't want to send anything back that we don't need to right. send back.
Yeah. Now, and my follow-up point to this
time travel
is, oh God, there's a tumbleweed in there, but when the proximity alert goes off a second time, they don't have an abort switch for this thing. Like a potential yeah, well, person's I mean, in there. Oh, don't worry about it. We're just going to send them through. It'll be fine.
Well, it could have been like, you know, it builds a charge and then goes off. And once you reach a certain point with the charge, there's no fail safe for that. Like, because
right,
literally
like 60 seconds could have been the time it took to recharge.
They didn't see his motorbike until it was like 8 seconds, and she turns around and has time to say, dude, there's somebody there. By that time, it's at 3 seconds, and there's no time to stop it.
Maybe.
In which they do abort the second it goes off.
Right.
And I thought they missed a huge opportunity here for this to be an even better movie, because I was hoping and praying that the monkey was going to be a sidekick on this journey.
Yes, I had that exact thought.
Oh man, wouldn't that just have been great? Just him and a monkey on a dirt bike fighting the good fight.
Yep.
And then of course the monkey gets sent back in time when he rides away, and I was just like, dang it.
Remind me when we get to the end of this movie, I have something to say about that monkey.
Okay. Esther the monkey.
Okay.
So we find out that he's been set back 105 years into the past, and the exact date was November 5th, 1877. And he's driving around in the desert until it gets dark, and he spots a fire off in the distance. So he rides his motorbike up to it over the hills, and it's this old Mexican man with like a poncho and a hat on, and he is with another guy, but he's sort of hiding in the bushes because he hears this strange sound coming over the hills. And the old guy sort of stands up, and Lyle like drives right up to him. And for some reason, he never turns off his bike or gets off his bike to say hi to people. He just sits on his bike and screams at them. And
he's in a rush, bro.
And, he's trying to win the race, dude, man.
Gosh. And this dude is like, understandably terrified because he's never seen anything like this. It's like a beast from the nether world crawled up and is like growling at him, and he's freaking out at even just the headlights shining on his chest. So Lyle gets off of his bike and pulls a flashlight out of his bag and shines it on the dude, and he has a heart attack and just keels over. So I had like a good and a bad note for this, the actor that played this old guy. One, he expressed his utter terror at this beast very convincingly. Like, I was actually sort of like on the edge of my seat for him for a second, like feeling what he was feeling. But then he falls over. Lyle goes to try and resuscitate him by pounding on his chest. And Declan noted,
he pumps on his chest and the guy blinks like 3 times. and like the key point of this guy being frightened to death is that his eyes are wide open. He blinks 3 times and then he closes his eyes as he's pounding on his chest. And then the next scene, his eyes are wide open and his mouth is open. And he's like,
First crazy millionaire note. If we were to be able to remake this movie, which I think it could be remade. I mean, I'm utterly against a lot of the reboots that are made, but this one I think could use a touch up. And number one, allow your friggin' main character to speak Spanish. I know it was the 80s, but so many people speak Spanish. You can have some Spanish in a movie without, you know, without the movie falling.
He knew señor and señorita.
Yeah, that is true.
Those are the important ones, right?
Well, donde está the El Baño.
So we're 10, 15 minutes into this movie, and we figure out that Lyle Swan is now a murderer.
About the half-assed attempt at CPR? Like, he's like, all right, I'm real upset about this guy having a heart attack, and like, he's obviously probably dead because he's like, he's an NPC on a side quest, and you accidentally like attack him, so he starts attacking you. And you find out, well, I can probably finish him off in like one hit. So, all right, he's dead. And then you're like, right. Oh, shit, I should probably save this guy. His side quest might have been important. So you're like, all right, I guess I'll try. And then one, maybe two attempts, and you're like, you know what? Never mind.
He pumped on his chest like 4 times and he's like, he's gone.
But he wasn't a bad actor. Like, he showed emotion during the scene. But yeah, the CPR attempt was half-assed.
Yeah, I think we learn later that he's really not good with death, period.
Yeah, and that's another really great part of his character is that, again, he plays that character so well that is... if he had realized that he was back in time, he probably would have been freaking out the entire time. So it's probably a good thing he didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he throughout this whole movie never touches a gun and is completely taken aback by the death that's all around him. Like, and that's such a great, again, for the 80s, making these strange character choices for their leading men, giving them these like very vulnerable aspects of the personality is just not something you see in current cinema.
Well, you also, I'm going to go back to the current events of the time. This movie comes out right about when they're trying to, you know, rectify the women's right movement. So they're trying to make men seem more vulnerable because 80s men and 90s men can share their emotions, and 80s and 90s men, it's okay to be scared. It's okay to not be like a man's man that's super tough and can handle every situation that's thrown at him.
Right.
So like it's a forward type of momentum and thought process, but it's not forward enough to actually make the change go through. So I think that
it's true. It's,
yeah. In cinema, they reflect
it's the,
that.
It's the work up to it. And then, you know, Desert Storm and all that happens, you know,
yeah,
around a little bit later in the time frame. So, yeah, it's unfortunate we didn't keep moving on that path and actually have these fully fleshed out male and female characters.
Yep.
But, you know, we tried.
It happens.
Hopefully we can try again.
So I like that. Okay, so the night he, like, the corpse is obviously laying next to him. And he's like, all right, well, I guess I can deal with the dead body in the morning. You know what's really important? I better go ahead and rip off this number 82 that's stapled to the front of my shirt that's paper. You know, not that a piece of paper will give me any additional warmth, but I think that's like in the cinema, like after the scene ended, I was like, you know what? That's actually not stupid. He's basically showing the audience that this dude died, so the race is no longer important to him.
Well, I agree that not only that, but I think he was like, you know, I've lost the race because I'm sitting around.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
So like, it wasn't that he killed the body.
It was a sign of defeat, like, yeah. Respect. I think it was more a sign of defeat, and he was like, maybe it's a little bit of both. Like, how am I supposed to race after this?
Right?
Like, yeah. Crazy remake of this movie, Lyle Swan cries during that scene.
Yeah, and we get some answers.
Have a freak out moment.
I think that what really got me, like, what cracked me up, and I laughed for much longer than I care to admit when he buries the old guy and like he turns around to walk away and then he turns back towards the buried rocks and just kind of shrugs like, I don't even like I'm supposed to say something right now. But and then he gets on his bike and drives off.
He was a really old man.
Like a weird Mexican dude. He held his chest for a while and then passed out. Seemed kind of cool, but I never got to know him.
He liked fires and looking at the stars.
If I had a kill, bang, or marry.
this dude.
In present day, all of his fans are freaking out.
So we now get the first glimpse at our bad guys for the movie. First introduction to our bad guy named Reese, played by Peter Coyote.
And Jack.
Peter Coyote.
And Jack. Jack?
Yep.
Jack. Oh, right. Jack's the first dude he killed.
Oh, my God. Jack. Thank God he killed that horrible... oh, my God. That actor needed to die.
Yeah, but I totally want his glasses. Yeah, he had the most badass guy
glasses.
Should we
talk about real quick? They rob this dude right after this guy kills him. And they contest the fact they're like, hey, you shot him. You shouldn't have done that. He's like, fuck you guys. Do you want your money or not? Yeah, we want our money. So they... to proceed to take the shit off of him and don't take his gun or his sunglasses.
Well, actually, they don't take his sunglasses. You're right about that. But the way that scene played out was a little bit different. This dude's basically freaking out, right? They got away with like whatever they did. And he's got this really terrible Southern accent and he's overacting to the nth degree. And like you already know he's going to die or you have a good idea that he's probably going to die. Mm-hmm. I hoped he was going to die. And so the main villain, Reese, gets off of his horse and he shows him like the silk that they stole. and he shoots him, and then he turns around, and his two colleagues are like aiming down at him from the top of the horses, and they're basically like, dude, that was fucked up. We're probably going to have to kill you. And he just like explains his way out of it. He's kind of like a no honor amongst thieves. This dude's right. about to leave. And if he leaves, he's probably going to get caught by the marshals. And then we're screwed, too, because he's going to give us up to cut a deal with the marshals. So,
well, yeah, that's the sort of the going trope that happens a lot with bad guys. Is you've got the one central kind of intelligent but more clever bad guy,
idiots.
And then he surrounds himself with idiots, exactly, because it's easier to maintain power if you're the one with all the brain power, you know. And
that's the Sith overlord just, coming out in Jeremy, by the way, audience. Yes.
And again, this is another great cinematic moment for the cinematographer, is this little thing that he does is he pulls down a roll of silk from the goods cart that they have. And he's like, he's deceiving the dude. He's waving this roll of silk around saying, this is mighty fine silk. And then as the silk flies past his person, he's able to stealthily pull his gun and shoot through the silk at the bad guy. And then there's this moment in the camera where they show a close up of him holstering his gun and then a close up of the silk flowing slowly down to his feet with the bullet hole in it. And it was just, again, I was just really impressed with the cinematography. I was not expecting that out of this movie.
There's a lot of those shots where it was like little things that somebody did that they would take time to make a shot of it. And a lot of the time, I think with just the way that movies are made nowadays, it made me think like, oh, that's going to tie into something here coming in soon. Right. Like that's like a form of foreshadowing, when realistically it seemed like they were more so using it as a form of, you know, artistic expression.
Yeah, right. I agree. This type of play doesn't really happen in movies anymore. The little details in common day movies are always references to something else, like Declan said. And in these older movies, we see all the characters' backstory is usually developed about midway through the movie, because they've got to hook the audience with action. So lots of action and then storyline so that you continue to be interested. And then the movie continues with more action. And then at the end, it tries to tie everything up and put a bow on it, which this movie actually does really well. It does all the common 80s tropes, but it pulls it off with a hokey sort of fun vibe to it.
Agreed. Yeah. And I really think that the hokey vibe is kind of secondary, because like even the bad guy's hokiness is still overshadowed by how fucking bad they are.
Which
is not something you get in a lot of more comedy oriented movies, because you want your bad guys to be as goofy as possible. So what happens is we have to introduce these characters to each other. So Rocky Balboa goes and takes a new dip in the lake, where there just so happens to be a woman swimming in the lake as well.
I think the woman needs a denomination, a moniker, if you will. And I believe that it should be the Peeper Creeper.
The Peeper Creeper. She does creep on him.
The Aussie Peeper Creeper.
Yeah.
Spies
him and hides from him, but then he gets out, and so she gets out and continues to watch him get undressed. We get some really far up penis shots. You don't really get to see anything, but you get to see man bush, which is again not something we see a lot in current cinema.
True.
And Declan made an observation, and I was kind of agreeing with him on the fact that like, who goes and takes a dip and then still dripping wet puts on their motorcycle leathers on top of their body? Like
immediately.
Yeah, immediately. Like, you're just asking for a rash, brother.
I wouldn't do it, but I guess, you know, we're talking about Swan here. He is like a bird, a foul bird. So the water probably just slips right off of him, because he's got, you know, those feathers that are what is it called? Water. Come on, help me.
Not absorb. It's the opposite of absorbent.
Oh, hydrophobic.
Yes, hydrophobic. Boom. Thank you, Declan.
Sorry, I wasn't really paying attention to the first part.
So he gets dressed and tries to start his motorcycle, and big surprise, it won't start. And just so happens that he is parked up on a ridge above where Reese and the gang are taken a small break, getting water from a stream that's coming off of the river that they were swimming in. So they get up and or they are arguing. He hears them arguing and he runs off and tries to signal them down because he still, again, thinks he's in present day.
Should have buried him, and, man. Should have buried him. It's the Christian way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he comes over the ridge like Sasquatch, like with, again, with his helmet on, like not bothering to take it off. And they all freak out. Like
that was a perfect reenactment of that scene, actually.
I don't know what the Wachutu equivalent of Red Devil would be. But I mean, if they weren't white people, I'm sure.
El Diablo.
Yeah. That
so they shoot at him. He tries to take off. His bike won't start it immediately. So they're freaking out. But Reese sort of keeps his calm because he's again the clever one. So he climbs up and sees him getting on the bike. And of course, just in the nick of time, the bike starts and he drives away. Mm-hmm. And the other two are freaking out like it was a demon. It was, you know, it was an alien or whatever. And Reese is like, no, that was a man on a machine. And I want that machine. Like, again, the denoting the cleverness of this bad guy.
The naked creeper peeper. Sees it all. She rolled a nat 20 on her stealth check. So she just, you know, she sees it all. She doesn't get dressed either. Which is kind of strange that she waits until the action is over to get dressed. It's like, if you were found, babe, yeah, like you're naked and these are desperados, I would hate to be you.
And they sure are desperados.
So he goes off and gets himself lost in the middle of the desert a little more. And he happens to come to the little town where this woman is staying with a pastor. Now the pastor was a strange character too. He definitely had some Frollo vibes towards his Esmeralda. He was very like possessive of her, but not like physically possessive of her and
spiritually possessive.
they're trading guns from the villagers for food and water. Which I could have sworn that there was going to be some kind of like side story here where they're like not really the priest, like he's not really the priest, that he's also some kind of a con man.
Well, he was. And they did develop it when it, so
I mean
so
but it, barely.
Well, I they yeah, okay. He, so
he's
it wasn't
totally
a full,
on the team of the baddies.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't. So it wasn't fully developed, but each character that was involved in that kind of touched on it. So we see him in the town trading guns and whatnot for supplies, and he's telling the Hispanic people this, you know, this will keep the devil away and you'll be safe here at this well, and right. You know, basically you can work for me. But he doesn't say it word for word, but that's like the assumption. And so they get super pissed off when Machine Man in his red getup goes through the town dragging all the desperados behind him, and you know the townspeople are freaking out yelling El Diablo, and the padre, the priest, is like, oh shit man, this dude's fucking up, you know, my game plan. So that's the scene that introduces the story that you're talking about, Jeremy.
There are parts later where he goes and he like meets the bandits, and you know he has some questionable behavior too, but like I wanted a more fleshed out character. Like, who is this dude? It's like, it kind of reminded me of Shepherd Book and Firefly. You know, he's this preacher, but he's got sort of, you know, military training, and he's got an ident card that allows him access to the Alliance ship.
And he's a wicked shot.
And he keeps telling, you know, Malcolm keeps saying like, you know, one of these days you're gonna have to tell me how a preacher learned to shoot so well. And Book just says, no, I don't.
Yeah. Like, that they touched on it without having him have any interactions with the main character. But like the problem with that is that for that story to develop, the Shepherd Book story in this padre that we see, it would have had to been a TV series realistically, because Shepherd didn't give up his secret to the crew for like several episodes, way more than 2 hours worth of footage.
Well, so I mean, he didn't actually ever give up his secret to the crew.
He sort of kind of did at the end.
In Serenity, he dies before he can tell him anything.
Right.
But that's completely different.
Yeah.
Right, and I think that the guy does get some sort of transcendence, because I mean, he is playing the father, he is helping out people, but he is playing both sides of the coin.
It's very, very.
But again, because it's the land of survival, like that's something that's alluded to in the movie as well.
Well, I was gonna say that the woman later fleshes out that character without him actually telling his story. She says, Padre and I have been working together and we sell stolen goods. Like, that's the story, is he's a con man. He cons people out of stuff and he convinces people to buy stolen goods. And there's
to make a point on that, I don't think it's that way. I think because she talks about her mom told her to either use her body or her gun.
Right.
And she's like, I use my gun. I take shit from people and me and the Padre sell it for different prices to keep everything running here. So that's what I think.
So they're highwaymen, basically.
But what I was saying is that the movie in small parts offers the pastor transcendence, because he chose.
I think you mean redemption.
Redemption, because there's a part where he's like, if I just kill this guy who's kind of like messing with the woman's head and getting us into all this trouble, like, this is kind of like a chance from God that I could kill him. And then the other guy pops in the opposing window and he shoots that guy instead, and then decides, oh, you know, I'm going to do a Hail Mary, you know, Our Father, cross my heart, hope I don't die for almost crossing a good person. Like,
fair.
That's way later in the movie.
Yeah, that is way later.
I mean, we get to see a little bit of his journey on there, but crazy remake of this movie, I would flesh out his character.
How
a
about
bit
you
more.
Crazy remake this into a miniseries?
It could totally
be a
miniseries.
Yeah, I think a TV show would be better, especially if you're going to do that level of character development on the Padre. Right. That, or it's going to have to be a 2.5 hour movie, and at that point we're talking, you know, Lord of the Rings type of shit. And in Westerns, that usually doesn't go over very well, though there are a few 2 hour Westerns.
Yeah. So we let's see here.
So then the marshals pop up once the banditos are in the town, right?
Well, OK. So, yeah. So the banditos follow Lyle Swan to the town, and he leads them on a chase through the town where Pecker Peeper lures him down into her basement. And this is where it gets a little weird.
Oh,
so
God.
We're going to put that scene on pause for a second, because this is what happens. Again, a weird character for the female lead. She lures him into the basement of the church, chats with him for a while, gets him to sort of give up some information, and then points a gun at him and tells him to get naked. And he looks at her like, what? And she says, take off your clothes. And she starts unbuttoning her clothes. And me and Declan both are looking at each other at this point thinking, like, does she really think that, like, wearing his rider outfit is going to give her the power of the bike? Like, is that what's happening here?
Oh, no. Well,
and he sort of giggles at her and he's like,
women can't do
girls
that.
Can't do that.
Yeah.
And she just sort of smiles at him. The next scene, they're having fucking sex.
Yep.
Like, she legitimately rapes him at gunpoint in this movie.
And pillow talks him. And pillow talks him while they're fucking.
Oh, he totally
Stockholm syndrome.
Stockholm's with her. Yep. Like, he imprints on her immediately.
So can we backtrack then just a little bit to right before when she lures him into the basement of the church with the motorcycle? One of the banditos turns the corner and draws a gun on her.
Bam.
And shoots and misses, and she draws her gun out and she shoots him. And this guy, you know, lucky for him, like, sees a fly near his face or something and turns really quickly or has to sneeze. So he looks up and gets his nose blown off instead of his face.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Lucky guy in that. And let me talk about this guy real quick, whose name is Carl.
Carl and Claude.
And the these brothers. two are the, you know, the underlings, or as Jeremy and Mike have put him, the dumb ones.
The minions.
But these guys, like, talk to each other, call each other by name, are, like, totally, like, share everything with each other.
Bros for life. Bros for life.
Yeah, and they are,
they got a bromance.
Solid, funny little characters. And Reese treats them like shit.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And And so Duke gets his nose blown off, and Claude fucking comes and is like, you know, I got you, buddy, and gets him onto his horse, and they, you know, they ride home.
Yeah, he convinces Reese, like, you know, we can come back for and deal with this later. Right now, he's dying. We need to retreat and take care of him.
So they do that, and then the pastor goes in and is like, you know, what's this machine? And he's like, where are you guys talking about? I'm really sorry, blah, blah, blah. And then she takes him. And yeah.
So in this sort of pillow talk scene between Pecker Peeper and Discount Rocky Balboa, she
I believe it was Creeper Peeper, by the way.
Oh, well, Pecker Peeper, Creeper Peeper, same diff.
Pecker Peeper.
So she sort of lets him know that she has a penchant for reading. And like Declan had said before, she tells him sort of her life story and how she was raised very roughly, and that her mom told her that she could either use her, you know, her body to make her living, or a gun, and she chose the gun. Yep. And she sort of gets this twinkle in her eye when they start talking about books, and she asks him if he can read, and he's like, of course I can read. And he does, still again not realizing that he's in the fucking Wild West. And she opens up a trunk and pulls out like 7 guns.
She's like, do you have any books with you? And he says, no, I don't carry them with me. And of course, you know, you're like, people had a trunk of all of their stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like the frontier kind of thing. Yeah. So like what you had with you is essentially like what you carried on your back.
Yep.
So she's like, I have 3 books, and she does like very sophisticated. Like this was a point of class.
Oh, yeah. She was also very excited though. Like it was very
right.
Like she doesn't share that with people.
Well, and, yeah. And I would also like assume based upon that interaction that it was kind of a like, okay, cool. You know, I slept with this guy. He's got some like cool stuff for sure. But is this like a long-term sort of a thing? Cause obviously in the Old West, if you found somebody that was quality, that was probably the last quality person you were going to see for a while, especially if they're like blowing through a ghost town like the one that they were at, that old well. So in my mind, she was like, well, you know, he's pretty good at sex. I've already seen his dick, and it's, you know, it's a decent sized dick. And, you know, we're having good conversations. He can read.
Let's see if he can read.
He can read. He says he can read. Maybe he's just trying to impress me. So here's a book. Prove it, yeah. Motherfucker. And then
has him read out loud to her.
Yeah.
And she gets very, very swooshy.
And she's like, kiss me again.
She's like,
and he's like, sure, why not? Yeah. Put a gun in my head, why don't you?
And that's when we get, after this little giggling conversation of him reading to her, I believe it was some Mark Twain.
Yep.
She sees this little medallion hanging from his neck, and she asks him what's the story with it. And Declan, like immediately,
yep.
He starts telling this story about how his grandmother got it from his grandfather. She took it off of him, and she never knew who he was. And immediately Declan goes, he's his own grandfather.
Yep. I utilized the key phrase said by Fry in Futurama. He did do the nasty in the pasty.
It's the rule. If you go to the past and you have sex with a woman, she's going to be part of your history.
Well, I mean, like, it makes sense, right? Because your ancestral line would have to come from somewhere. And the most
logical doppelgangers are made.
Explanation that solves for paradoxes is for that ancestral timeline to start whenever you bang the person, because that's how genetics work.
And the only way to perpetuate your own species would be to have sex with somebody other than the first person you have sex with.
Correct.
We get this little meet cute moment with them, and again pointing to the fact that I really believe that that Pecker Peeper was the most intelligent character in this. Like, it almost seemed like she was starting to understand at that moment what was going on before the guy from the future could understand what was going on.
Yeah, she's like, I'm your grandma.
Yeah, and she was like totally cool with it at that point. And
because her first thought was, I'm going to steal that.
Yeah. And so Priest comes in and he's like, he's got to leave. He's bringing too much heat onto us. Like, the marshals are here.
And did you two just fuck?
Yeah, and he got all salty about them putting their clothes on. And she's like, he can go. I got what I needed from him. And so Lyle decides that he needs to talk to these marshals because they're cops and somebody stole his motorcycle. So he's going to report it to the cops again, not knowing he's in the fucking past. And he walks straight up to the marshals, gets a little loud with the first one, the main one. And they'll sort of shoot at his feet and tell him, like, you know, you back off, boy, you know, respect the law. And he's very, again, very interesting male character. He's like, I'm sorry, I lost my temper. Let me tell you what's going on. And then they have a rational conversation.
One of the things that I also want to mention is a movie trope of this era as well, which is all the characters in the movie, their names are going to get said at least 5 or 6 times during the whatever opening scene introduces them. And right. The reason for this trope is the American audience of the 80s apparently has a really hard time remembering main characters' names.
I still do. I don't remember the girl's name. I don't remember the pastor's name.
Really?
I remembered all the bad guys' names.
Oh, that's interesting. All those characters, Padre, Swan, and all of their names get repeated at least 4 times in every single scene that they're introduced in. And the idea behind it was, we want to make these characters stick in your mind so that you'll tell other people about the movie.
Well, and we actually have to backtrack a little bit. So what
Claire, happens by the way, is her name. But I like Creeper Peeper or yep. You know, Pecker
Peeper.
Peeper.
Yeah, we totally, I don't think we introduced her as a actress either.
Yeah, so we should do that right now. So Claire is played by Belinda Bauer, who is an Australian actress. Very odd accent in this movie, though. It sounded like she was going for a generic American accent with a twang of Hispanic in it, but her character was from Louisiana.
Louisiana.
So it was a very bizarre accent that she pulled off.
But God, was it a gorgeous accent for an Aussie.
It was a gorgeous accent for an Aussie. And actually, I was looking at her up on Wikipedia, and she's actually a working psychologist.
Oh, cool.
Ever since she quit the film industry, she's been a working psychologist, which I thought was really cool.
So there was actually a single scene before she said that she was from the Bayou area, Louisiana, where I swear, like, just for a single scene, I heard remnants of a French accent. All the other scenes, it seems like a very plain Southern sort of an attempted Southern anyway.
A mock
Southern accent that is very strange. But for a single scene, I swear I heard like remnants of a French accent. I was like, oh, wow. Like, and then she said she was from Louisiana. I was like, damn it. If you could maintain that accent you had for that one sentence, the entire movie, you totally would have like
pulled it.
Yeah,
off.
You would have pulled it right. off. But she
did. Yeah. So one thing we do have to sort of retro talk about here is that as they're having this conversation with the pastor, Reese and his men have snuck into the basement of the church, and Reese has stolen the motorbike, and Claude, one of his minions, has hidden away inside the basement. So Lyle goes down and finds that it's gone. So that's when he decides he's going to go talk to the marshals. Meanwhile, Claire is tending to one of the villagers who snuck down there and was playing with the bike when Reese came in there and knocked him out. Of course, Claude is hiding down there, and he comes up and knocks her out and kidnaps her along with Reese taking the bike and
leaving the helmet.
Leaving the helmet behind. And so Lyle, then we cut back to Lyle talking to the marshals and getting their help and basically saying that he'll help them take down Reese if they help him get his bike back. And then the next scene that we get is Reese pulling the bike into the sort of little bandit hangout that he controls, it seems.
Yeah, and woman is dragged along with because she gets hit over the head.
Right, on Claude's horse.
Yep.
And then I think probably the funniest scene in the movie is these cowboys trying to figure out this dirt bike, which, you know, it was goofy because it's a goofy situation. But at the same time, it was played really straight and really well. They were all poking at it, prodding it. And he kept telling them, look, it's a machine. Like, we're going to figure out how to use it. And Claude takes Claire into the main shack and ties her to the bed. where Carl is going to do his dastardly deeds to her.
Yeah. I got a gift for you, brother. Which is primarily
as cutting her up.
Yeah, he wants to cut her up and play with her a little bit. Then Rhys gets on the motorbike and he's like, so what do I do? And Claude says, I think he pressed this button and then he kicked it and jumped at the same time. So like it's this whole like 4 minute scene of him trying to figure out how to kickstart this bike without knowing what a bike is, what a kickstart is, or, you know, how the machine works.
And then he gets lucky.
He gets lucky. He kickstarts it, but obviously doesn't know how to ride a motorbike. So it just takes off underneath him.
Full throttle.
And he flies off the bike. And when it happens, of course, all these simpleton bandits flip out and they all pull out their weapons and start firing on the bike. They unload at least 20 shots into this bike.
And an arrow.
Including a crossbow bolt. And so, like, of course, bad guy is super disappointed with his minions. And, so that was
great. Buttheads.
Buttheads. It's a machine.
What a comeback, though. You know what? At work, when someone pisses me off now, you butthead.
You butthead.
Yeah, watch them take you to HR over that one.
Oh, yeah, man. I would be like, I don't know, man. I don't know what came over me. I was watching this movie from the 80s, and I just thought it would be a really cool comeback.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I was just so gosh darn flustered. Oh, there I go again.
So the Marshals and Lyle and the pastor have now gotten to the town, and they're sort of overlooking, plotting what they're going to do. They're going to wait till sundown to do anything. And it's that time where Lyle introduces them to energy bars. And, of course, they're poking and prodding at it like it's an alien thing. Again, very well done. And as night falls, we get to see them playing with glow sticks, which were, you know, the cool thing in the 80s. I still think
glow sticks are awesome. I also want to point out that the whole movie from the beginning to this point where they're scouting out the bandit camp, the tempo of the movie is full throttle, nonstop, just action, go, 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 storyline, sex. And then all of a sudden the tempo just dies right here. And
yeah, it slows the fuck down.
And it's kind of cool because they're building up tension
for the next chase scene.
For the
explosive action scene.
Yeah.
So they basically plot this out, and Lyle's like, there's my bike. She's probably in the shack. Like, let's do this. Let's get in and get out quietly. And of course, the main marshal dude, the next thing we see is him sneak up behind one of the bandits and garrote him to the point where they say later he takes his head off, basically. And you see like a little splat of blood fly in his face when he does it. And of course, at this, Lyle Swan is just like flipping out. He's like, dude, you're a cop. What are you doing? And the other marshal's like holding his mouth shut and says, this is survival, man. Like, this is what we do. We kill bandits, you know?
Yep.
And then we get sort of a little backstory that this marshal, Rhys, killed his son.
Yep, his son.
A year or so ago, and he's sort of had this blood oath to kill him. And he, of course, instead of continuing to be stealthy, main marshal stands in the middle of the road, screams out for Rhys and walks towards the cabin,
well,
thinking that he's going to be a stand up fella and open up the door and duel him pistol to pistol.
Well, I also they foreshadow it with his deputy says to Swan, no one has ever beaten this guy in a stand up gunfight. And as soon as he said stand up gunfight, I was like, all right, he's going to lose because the main villain is going to do some tricky shit.
Which he does. He gets one of his minions to dress a coat rack up like him. He sneaks out of the cabin, out of the back, and circles around. So Lackey opens up the door. Marshall opens fire on a coat rack and then gets plowed in the fucking back with a double barrel shotgun. And so Lyle and the gang retreat to sort of get their bearings. retaking the element of surprise by throwing a bunch of road flares into the town.
And they all thought it was dynamite. And by the way, they took the motorcycle as well. Yeah, they were all screaming, dynamite, dynamite! Yep.
And so Lyle rides in with a log between his handlebars and knocking people down with his, with his dirt bike.
Which would not work, by the way.
Oh, no, he would lose control like that.
I mean, the impact of the log against him would rip his hands off of the handlebars and he'd fly off the bike and the bike would just keep going.
Yeah. And Marshall number two rides in shooting people. Pastor, from this point on, we find out that Pastor is a fucking deadshot. And again, this is why I would like to have his character rolled out a little more, because like there are a lot of allusions to the Civil War in this movie.
Oh, a ton.
Yeah, whereas like Reese is always talking about the Confederacy and like if General Lee had motor machines like this, like we would have won the war. And he's got a Confederate flag up in the shack. Yep. Like there's a lot of that. And then for the pastor to be like this con man, but still a man of God and a deadshot, like there's some backstory there where he was a fucking soldier and like wanted to get out of the life, you know. Yep.
The marshal was introduced, the one that wanted to kill the main villain was introduced as a Yankee, so obviously he was fighting in the Civil War as well.
Right.
He was also he makes a point to say when they do mention that the two people were dead prior to the scuffle, both were decapitated. Reese makes a point to say, "Yeah, that's a Yankee trick."
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure if it really is, but
yeah, who knows? But.
Yeah. So Lyle breaks into the shack at the top of the hill.
Mr. Swan.
Sort of accidentally killing
with
Carl.
With his motorcycle, yeah.
Accidentally killing Carl in the process. Because Carl's behind the door, he runs under the door with his dirt bike and sends Carl flying into the fireplace. And he begins to untie Claire. Again, remake of this movie, he comes to save her, but at that point she's already untied herself and she's stabbed Carl in the neck and killed him. Like, she's taken her chance.
I think Claude and Carl in the remake should get a better start. Like, get a new start. Like, they should turn against Reese in the end. like, Reese should get his
maybe she tries to shoot like Clyde, and then Carl tackles him to the ground, so the shot misses, so therefore they don't have a reason to kill her. And it's actually the main villain that then says, "Clyde, go get that woman for leverage," and then she gets taken back for the remake. And then the Clyde and Carl decide, you know what, this is kind of messed up, this girl's like innocent, and they cut her free. And they're planning on escaping with them, like as a group, and then maybe they get killed in the crossfire.
Alternate version, she has the drop on them and she could kill them, but instead says, "Hey, come work for me. Like, I have these ideas to open up this shop," which they allude to later.
Yeah, that would work.
And like, and they become her traveling companions as she travels to LA at the end, you know, in the backstory.
And she teaches them to read.
And she teaches them to read, guys. This is the remake. So he saves her, they take off. Marshall dies on the way, the second Marshall dies on the way, and there's this sort of, again, beautiful moment for Lyle. Like, he watches this dude die and he's like, "No, he's okay, I can fix him," and he's pulling first aid stuff out of his bag, and Claire's like, "Dude, he's gone," and he says, no, he's okay," and he rips open his shirt and he sees the bullet wound and he just recoils and flips out, and everybody around him's looking at him like, "This is life, man, how are you not accustomed to this?" And he's just flabbergasted and he can't even like bring himself to talk.
Q80s movie scare prank.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then we get a jump start from the dead marshal.
Yeah. Who grips him by the collar and says, "Get Rice."
"Did I get Reese?" He says, did I get him? Yeah. And he says, "Yeah, you got him." And then he smiles and says, "Not my jurisdiction," and then dies.
That was a weird line, man. Though.
Yeah. So they're running from Reese and the gang, all 20 of them on horseback, and
cool moto tricks, by the way.
Yeah, and they get pretty far, but then of course the bike stops working because it's riddled with bullet holes and an arrow in the gas tank, and so they pastor basically pulls a gun on him and says, "Leave it. Once they have it, they'll stop following us, you know, like, and we'll survive." And of course the woman's like, "No, we'll drag it."
And while this scene is going on, he's actually doing Morse code on the transmitter on his bike, because for some reason FM AM frequencies can transmit over time.
Yep.
Which maybe is not how FM AM works, but we'll.
Yeah, because at this point, what's happened is the scientists back in our present time have set up a rescue mission.
Yep.
And they basically have opened the window from 60 seconds to 3 hours. But the woman tells the main scientist at the top, like, this is a one shot thing. This is the longest we can keep it open. Get out and get him and get back, because we've already blown like two power plants trying to draw the power for this.
Well, to be fair, this is the first time where he actually like felt the need to try to communicate elsewhere to just like send some help.
Yeah.
Well, he's trying to find like a phone. Nobody's right. answering him. He right. still thinks he's in the present
day. And his bike is now kaputs. So yeah. he's got to, you know, scavenge what he can from and it in that time that he has. And he takes what is probably a CB radio turned into a transponder for his motorcycle.
And he also is terrible at riding horses.
Yeah.
But they get to the top of this rock face, and Reese sort of laughs. He says, we got him now, because as they find out, there's a sheer drop of like, I don't know, 100 feet, 150 feet on the other side into a rocky canyon. And so he parks the bike. They sort of perch on a little ledge on the other side where they reload their weapons. And they don't have a whole lot of ammo. They expend most of it. Marshall gets some really nice sniper shots off with this long barrel revolver and
chromed out.
Yeah. Lyle's sitting there doing his Morse code, because again, he doesn't touch a gun at all in this movie.
And Chick runs out of bullets.
Chick runs out of bullets. Pastor is on his last reload.
When she pulls out the knife though, like that freaked me out. I was like, all right, it's gonna get real.
Oh, it's Lorena Bobbitt time. I was waiting for her to slice some penises off.
I'm about to say that's my kind of lady.
They get basically surrounded. All the bad guys are at the other end of the cliff, and they're like, you know, come on out. You know, we've got you surrounded. You have no hope. And then all of a sudden, a helicopter rises in front of them, and Lyle freaks out. He's like, yeah, baby. And all the banditos like freak out and run away, except for Reese, who's like,
it's a flying metal, right?
It's a flying machine. But I still want my machine. And so he starts shooting at the helicopter. And actually, I was almost certain that Claire was going to take his distraction to get the drop on him, and she was going to be the one to kill him. He takes out the pilot, the co-pilot, fucking expertly takes over and is, you know, trying to correct the spin. In one swoop, hits the dirt bike off the side of the cliff, and which sort of dejects Reese, saying like, that was what all this was for. This is what my people died for.
Yeah, and now you see it's gone. All the joy in his eyes just drained.
He was just like, all right, I'm done.
And then he really was done, because the helicopter spins around and he gets hit by the tail blade.
Called it.
And all that's left is just his shredded boots with his meat inside of it.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, if that also broke any sort of suspension of disbelief, those blades cannot handle hitting a human body and continue moving. Like they get broken. That helicopter would have been done.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, so crazy millionaire movie remake of this.
Titanium blades.
Well, so one thing I didn't note actually was when they saw the sheer drop at the other edge of the cliff, he sort of looked back at his motorbike and immediately I was like, oh my God,
he's going to jump it into the
motor. He's going to turn into a jet. I was a little disappointed that we didn't get a Megaforce remake here.
He totally should have time jumped to Megaforce. He would have been happy there.
He's like, but, in another timeline, I would have a motocross bike that could fly.
So the main scientist, who again is really cool, like in a modern day movie, this would have been a military thing. Like it would have been a military helicopter and pilot, and it would have been military people in this. But it was all like scientists and regular pilots. And the main scientist took the initiative to go back in time and retrieve this guy who accidentally went there.
Yeah, I mean, and he wanted to keep it on the down low. He didn't want like any of people funding his project to know that he royally fucked up the timeline.
Anyway, main scientist pulls Lyle Swan
onto the helicopter, and he's like, he turns and he says, Claire, come on. And the scientist says, no, you know, I'll explain when we get back to our time, but you're the only one that can come. And I'm still getting the feeling that Lyle doesn't really understand, again, that he's in the past.
Right.
And Claire 100% understands at this moment, and she just eye locks to the necklace around his neck. And she reaches forward like she's going to take his hand and then grabs his necklace and pulls it and just holds it out for him, like saying, you know, I get it. You should get it, too, you dumbass.
Yeah.
And
I wish she would have just like shouted over the din of the propellers, I'm your grandma, and then snatched the necklace.
And
you fucked your grandma.
And then it freeze frames with a overdub of the story that he told him about his grandmother and that how his grandfather disappeared and she never knew who he was, but that she had traveled to Los Angeles to find him and started a store. And that's became the matriarch of the Great Swan family. And again, this needs to be fleshed out. I want to see her journey. I want to see her go to Los Angeles, and I want to see her start that store, and I want to see her pass down this fucking legend to her children. And then, like, I wanted to see him go back into present time and go and visit her grave and, like, you know, or look at old pictures of her shop, you know. I wanted all of that backstory that just wasn't there. And I was so, oh, man, I was so frustrated at the end of this movie because I was gunning for this movie all the way. And then it fell a little too short for me at the very end.
I had something that I wanted to say for the end of the movie. Regarding Esther. And so my comedic aspect of my brain when we were watching this movie saw the helicopter come up and
it was Esther flying.
No, it was because, you know, I didn't hear anything because a lot like the one of the worst things about this movie was its audio quality.
Yeah.
And so like I didn't hear a lot of the stuff that was going on as like side like B-roll stuff. But I saw this helicopter come up, and when they reached out and he was yelling at him, my first thought of what he said was, where's Esther?
Like Esther disappeared. Yeah. Come back to the present.
Yeah. So it's like, Esther, like we don't like, not you. Like you can't come if Esther's not here. Where's Esther? We're looking for Esther. He's like, no, save me. He's like, no, where's the fucking monkey?
This is how we write our paper. You're not going to be in it. Yeah, that would have been pretty funny. So yeah, that's, I mean, again, like I felt, it fell a little short, but overall this movie was not deserving of a 24%.
But deserves at least twice that.
Yeah. So let's do this. So we all agree that it doesn't deserve a 24%. Declan, what would you rate this movie and how would you rate it?
I would give this 5 out of 5 severed noses.
5 out of 5 severed noses. A perfect score of severed noses from Declan.
Yeah.
All right.
Because I mean, even if you had a perfect score, you still have a severed nose.
Do you still feel that angst when you started this movie? Like, let's get this over with, or would you totally watch this again in a couple of years?
I mean, probably not a couple of years. Maybe like maybe like 10 or so when it's funny to watch it again.
Mike, upon your second viewing as an adult, what would you give this movie?
Serious rating. If I were to compare it to the movies we've watched so far, I would give it a perfect 6 out of 7 for a serious rating.
Okay.
Rating related to the other movies we've watched that have been really bad. But going with, you know, our little channel and what we're doing here, I would probably give it, I'll do 6 out of 7. Women can't do that.
Wait, 6 out of 7 girl rapes?
Yeah, man. Like, more power to her. I mean, I don't obviously like the idea of anybody raping anybody, but the fact that they actually displayed it in 80s culture is amazing to me.
So I guess that just leaves it to me. I will definitely say that this was better than Megaforce and Runaway. I think everything's going to be better than the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, God.
I don't think I'm going to even add that into my comparisons from here on out. But I would give this... man, you took lady rape.
I did.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, like, right when you guys were talking about lady rape, my computer screen changed to weeping angels.
Chasing, shit.
The doctor. So that's technically non-consensual touching.
Well, you know, it's poignant for our current political system. I would give this movie 9 out of 10 successful time monkey trials.
Nice. Nice.
Yes.
Jeremy, your cat is going crazy.
I know he's probably playing with one of my hair ties. So any final thoughts before we close out the podcast here?
Yeah.
I would totally suggest people see this, especially if you're an older person that's kind of into technology and you haven't seen this movie before. Like, it would probably be good nostalgia for those older style movies, or if you're even, you know, older.
It's worth
and
a
you're
watch.
Into westerns.
It's
like,
only a couple
it's
bucks
worth
on Amazon Prime. So,
and these are all like no name actors who are, you know,
yep,
doing good.
$5 for a single watch, and I think it's like $12 right now for like the full feature. I would say that this movie, and I've seen movies of this era, obviously, you know, when I was a kid. I would say that this is one of the movies that I would put in pop culture reference. If I was teaching like a pop culture class, I would totally have this be one of the movies that I featured, primarily because the genre, it mixes genres, cross genre. We have, you know, the moto cross type of references. We have the technology of the time and the, you know, space age sort of attempts at showing off what technology could possibly be like in the near future. And that mysticism that goes along with it, like no one really understands how any of this technology works. And then we have that mixed in with tropes that are not commonplace at all in 80s movies, and kind of experiment with some ideas that are mm-hmm. pretty far outside the box. I'd say also that it gives some quality in other aspects too. The musical score for this movie is phenomenal. Like,
it was all recorded and composed by Michael Nesmith.
All right.
All one guy.
Well, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm going to be looking up Michael Nesmith to see what other kind of music he's done.
Apparently, he actually was with the Monkees for quite a while. He was one of the four in the Monkees.
Ironic.
And also produced the cult classic Repo Man, if you've
seen
that. Wow.
Everything.
Executive producer.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
This guy is just quality.
So, yeah, he's quality overall, man. So yeah, that is Time Rider, The Adventure of Lyle Swan. And you heard it here in the really shitty movie podcast that it ain't that bad. And we actually suggest you go out and watch it for yourself. If you have a suggestion for a movie that you think is just like overly ridiculous and just and stupid to the max, please shoot us an email at watchthis@rsmpod.com. We did have some issues with our email system the last week or two, but that's all fixed now and we are able to receive emails. You can also join our Facebook page, which is also through rsmpod, and there you can send us messages. We will respond to you. Or if you just want to say hi or think we missed something in one of these classic films here. Once again, thank you, Declan, for your input on this, as well as you, Mike. And we will be back next week for an all-new movie. Declan, could you roll a D20 for me? So what we do here is, again, for new listeners, every week I have a list of movies called the D20 Board of Dread. And every week, once we finish a movie, I have somebody roll a D20. And every week, once we roll the D20, we consult the list to find out what our next movie will be.
19. It's not 11, though, which was Triceratops.
Oh, man.
I got a good one.
Oh, man, this is going to be hard. We will definitely get Ree back on the podcast for this one because we're going to need a woman's touch for this.
Giggity.
Next week's episode will be the film, Teen Witch.
Oh.
Cool. Dig it.
How can it have a better rating than Time Rider? Teen Witch is terrible.
Well, again, you know, Runaway had better than Time Rider, so.
True.
We'll get our own views on Teen Witch, and I'm sure it'll be a long episode. We're trying to keep these to about an hour. We do go a little bit over sometimes, but we're working on it. It's a new thing for us. So thanks again for listening. Please like, subscribe. Please give us a review. We'd like to hear what you think of the show, and 5 stars on iTunes helps us get out to more people. So thanks again, and we will see you all next week.
Bye. Adios, amigos.
Lady Rape.